friends. Of course, I go by the name of the Kid, Famous. You and I tuned into the Tim and Friends Show. Hello, education, entertainment, coast to coast. Ball it up, call it entertainment. Let's get this started. Uncle Tim, let's start this show in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Let's go.
All right. You saw it off the top, unless you're listening on podcast and you saw nothing. But for the first time in 118 episodes of Tim and Friends, my friend Jesse Rubinoff is not here.
You're not Ron.
No, Brick Tamland, nobody is Ron. I'm not Ron. That guy sitting over there is not Ron. Jesse is certainly not Ron. You might want to head to Hockey Night in Canada, Brick, if you want Ron. I'm Tim McAuliffe. This is Tim and Friends. And our digital producer is off for something as silly as his own bachelor party, which forced me to find a new partner in crime. It seems to be happening a lot in the last little while. And while I'm not exactly okay with all this, I digress. Please allow me to introduce the young man in Jesse's stead while he's off sowing his royal oats or just golfing with his buddies. You may know him from his time on Sportsnet Central or his Twitter account that describes him as an enjoyer of dogs, craft beer, and pop punk. 2 out of 3 ain't bad. He has been in the building for a long time, hustling hard to get these opportunities, and may or may not have a bordering on unhealthy love of all things wrestling. They spell it Mishy. We call him Mickey. Ladies and gentlemen, please help me welcome Kevin Mickey to the Friends List. What's going on?
It's a pleasure to be here. And 2 out of 3 ain't bad, so you don't like dogs? Or is it the pop punk? Yep.
I'm not answering that.
Okay, fair.
You can just wonder what it is that I don't like. But if you watch the show,
I'm well aware.
It's not dogs.
Yeah. Dogs are a plus. Big time plus.
Big time plus.
Craft beer.
Yeah.
Big time plus.
Yeah.
Pop punk?
Pop punk is where you lost me, kid.
All right, sorry. That's fair enough.
But you like sports. That's why we're sitting here.
Absolutely. I'm fired up to be here, Timmy. I really appreciate it. I'm happy to get going. I'm happy to be on the show. And, just happy to lend a hand to whatever you need.
Okay, so you're an Aurora boy. How long have you worked at Sportsnet?
It's been 9 long years.
You're not supposed to say it like that. You're supposed to say, I've enjoyed my time here at Sportsnet. It just so happens that it was 9. I saw Michaud just celebrated her 9-year anniversary.
She did, yeah. Michaud, I've worked with Michaud. It's Michaud and I have done the same job, actually. One of the things that I love doing most here at Sportsnet is on Sportsnet 360, we do the plays of the night, and I voice highlights for that. One of my favorite things to do. I love doing it. Our highlights, the best in the business, I always say.
I always give credit to those dudes because that's the... Honestly, I swear to God, and I gave this to Michaud, too. Like, when she came in here, I said, if you can do that job, you can do any job in this building. I used to do it. Sid used to do it. James Cebulski used to do it. Like, if you can do that job, you can do a lot of jobs. If I ever won the lottery, swear to God, I would retire and ask to work on the wheel overnight, Sportsnet 360.
It's a lot of fun, and I don't blame you, because it really is. It's something that I enjoy doing, because you come in, you get to just shoot the breeze with all your friends.
Right.
You get to talk about sports, talk about wrestling, talk about pop punk. There are people who like it, I swear.
So what is pop punk?
Pop punk is
if we want to bore the audience.
Pop punk is a mixture of pop music and punk music put together, so you have some really melodic verses with some kind of faster, upbeat punk music. That's kind of what it is, and that is...
Maybe I just didn't understand it.
It's the peak music genre.
It is. Yeah. You've already lost a lot of people. You shouldn't have done that.
See you later, folks.
Get one example.
Well, I mean, the classic example is Blink-182. They are the ultimate pop punk band.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
There you go.
You understand why I have to do this, right? Like, some of these people here have been with me in various iterations for 20 years. And I feel like when I bring a new friend into the equation, I have to introduce that friend to these friends right here. So anyone that comes in, I know that this is a sports show and we're going to get to the sports and Mickey's going to do a whole first things first and we're going to go through everything, but I feel like I have to introduce my friends here.
I appreciate it. I appreciate you letting the audience get to know me, and I look in turn to get to know the audience a little bit more as they shoot me some content on the Tim and Friends Twitter account.
Can you give away your Twitter handle as well?
You can follow me at Kevin Mickey, and that is M-I-C-H-I-E,
right.
At Kevin Mickey.
Spelt Mishy, but it's not Mishy Me on this mic. also saying what has to be said on today's episode of Tim and Friends. The NFL season kicking off tonight with Ed Sheeran and, oh, the Cowboys in Tampa. We will finish off our divisional previews with the Bucks, the NFC South, and Fox Sports rising star Jonathan Vilma from The U joining us on this edition of Tim and Friends. Sports Illustrated's John Wertheim on Layla's shot at Flushing tonight at the U.S. Open, and that's one way to solve the old Layla versus Layla Annie. We got her down to the Prince Pele-like one-name thing, Bianca and Layla. That's what Canada's got here. And oh, but Mickey and I don't stop there. Hell no. Seven straight for the Jays gets you Ben Nicholson-Smith as Toronto goes looking for a four-game sweep of the Yankees that would send the statement loud and clear across the big leagues. Thomas Dobby, producer of the show, is there still tarp on the field at Yankee Stadium? It is off. They have pulled it. We were worried maybe there might be some rain that would get in the way of the Jays' fourth straight win in the Bronx. However, that tarp has been removed. Batting practice back underway. Things you can only do right here on Tim and Friends. And one more guest just happens to be the most, I don't know, decorated Olympian in this country's history. That's right, kids. Penny Oleksiak joins the fray in about 55 minutes from now. That is the menu, kids. And the amuse-bouche starts with Biggie, Mickey. First things first. You ready, K-Dog?
Let's do it.
You okay with K-Dog? I'm not really good with it either. Yeah. All right, roll the animation.
First things first.
We can work on it. We can work on the nickname.
Yeah. K-Dog, Mickey, something with Mickey.
Yeah, something with Mick. Probably. Mick would be fine.
Mick.
Yeah.
We already got just two Micks here. McAuliffe.
We'll think of something.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's fair enough.
The Blue Jays, they will be looking to keep rolling. Last night, they beat the Yankees 6-3, their seventh straight W, 10th in their last 11. Tonight, they can complete their first four-game sweep at Yankee Stadium. Since 2003, the Red Sox, they beat the Rays last night to move ahead of the Yankees into first in the wild card. So, the Jays are now 1.5 games back of the Yankees for the second wild card.
Gotcha.
Are you worried that things are going too well? Is everything going too well right now?
I wonder, are you worried? Got me chuckling for some reason, and I know why it is. It's because Jays fans, maybe even Toronto sports fans, and I separate the two. I know a lot of people put them together. It's okay. Papers fall all the time. I know people sometimes like to lump Toronto sports fans and Jays fans together. I don't. There are a lot of Jays fans across the country who aren't Toronto sports fans. However, Toronto sports fans can't have nice things.
No.
Like, they can't just simply enjoy a 7-game winning streak and winning, what, 10 of 11 here for the Jays?
10 of 11.
Like, it is unbelievable the run that they have gone on to put themselves in this position. This is my role here. Enjoy it, everybody. Don't worry about where it ends up right now. The journey is the destination. Okay, kids? Just enjoy the run that they are on and see where it goes. Because right now they are playing as well as anyone in Major League Baseball. And for however long it lasts, enjoy it. Don't worry about where it ends up. This will pay dividends down the road. Don't worry about if you just wasted wonderful years from Marcus Semien and Robbie Ray, because that could be the case depending on how much the Jays shell out at the end of the year. Don't live in the future. Be in the present. Woosah, sports fans. Woosah. Vladdy's bomb last night. Like, how can you not just get enthralled with what you're seeing right now? Like, what did that come off the bat? 114?
114.3 miles per hour. That is the hardest hit home run that Aroldis Chapman has ever allowed.
All right, he ain't what he used to be, Aroldis, but that's ridiculous.
Yep.
And for me, listen, I get it. I understand it. Part of being a sports fan is projecting and seeing what's in the future. But, man, this run is just fun to watch for Jays fans. And I would suggest to you that right now it's going to go well. And they got to make hay, as I said yesterday on the show, because Boston's going to start playing easier teams. They're going to start getting players back from their COVID list. There are a lot of things that could change over the remaining 20 or so games for all three of these teams. It's not a guarantee, but the Jays are playing as well, if not better, than anyone in Major League Baseball right now.
Well, let me see if I can worry you then a little bit more. No George Springer yeah. tonight. Again, still kind of zen, still okay with everything?
Yeah, because Alejandro Kirk has turned into, I don't know, Bo Jackson. Like, I don't know what the hell he is right now, but he is really, really good. I think long-term, yes, of course, George Springer being out should worry Jays fans, but that's what happens when you're on a run. You can handle things like this. Can they handle it for the remaining 20 or so games? That would start getting me worried. But I'm not living in the future, Mickey. Wusa, in the present.
Right now.
Right? It's all about mindfulness these days.
You live in the now. And you got to live in the now with the fact that Vladdy ranks first in the AL in average, third in home runs with 41, fourth in RBI with 99.
Yeah, he's in that Triple Crown conversation. I don't think he will be Triple Crown, but who cares? Again, what a wonderful year for Vladimir Guerrero Jr. The only thing that I will listen to when it comes to Jays fans is whether or not you waste this year where it was obvious at the trade deadline that both Mark Shapiro and Ross Atkins thought the same thing. Otherwise, they wouldn't have given up what they gave up to get Berríos. They went out because they knew that this was a year where they could do some damage. And that little swoon cost them. Not going to lie. The one thing that I'll listen to from Jays fans is you don't want to waste what will be what? Two players in the top three in AL MVP voting and a player in the top two of Cy Young Award voting in the AL. Right? Like, that's where we are with these Jays. And if you don't make the playoffs, it would be a waste. If you do make the playoffs, look the bleep out.
We're going to have Sportsnet.ca's Ben Nicholson-Smith later. He can help you break down the zen state that we should all be in a little later.
I don't know that everyone will be in that. And it's okay. Maybe, I'm all right with it.
Maybe Ben can help spread the good word
okay.
of zen.
We'll try.
Of calmness.
Right. Of mindfulness.
Speaking of calmness, Canadian soccer fans, the Canadian men's soccer team got a big-time win in a World Cup qualifying match last night, beating El Salvador 3-0 at BMO Field. Canada got goals from Atiba Hutchinson, Jonathan David, and Tejon Buchanan as they finish the first window of qualifying with 5 points. Timmy, are they in a good spot heading into the next qualifying window next month in October?
I don't even have to say anything. I'll just do this. Given the disappointment of Honduras in the first game of this window, the finish from Canada was near perfect. Playing the States to a draw on the road and getting a point there was good. What they did last night was even better without Alphonso Davies. I have no idea how El Salvador drew the United States of America. Canada took it to them and continued to take it to them basically throughout the match. And that was, you know, with people getting beat up all over the field, they just continued to get it done. And how fitting was it that Atiba Hutchinson was the one who scored the opening goal on wonderful football? This was, dare I say, Spanish in their prime good football from the Canadians. And Atiba Hutchinson, who has been a lifelong leader, about to break the all-time record for caps in Canada, passing Julian de Guzman. It was, for me, very fitting to see Atiba Hutchinson score that goal. And let me tell you a quick story about the kind of, like, Atiba Hutchinson in Turkey is among, like, you could not walk around the streets with Atiba Hutchinson because he would get swarmed because of his career at Beşiktaş. I've been told his kids are celebrities in Turkey because he's that big. And Atiba Hutchinson played in a charity soccer tournament at Birchmount Stadium in Scarborough, Ontario, with myself and one Sid Sixera. Because I grew up in the hood, I knew that Birchmount has turf and that I should probably bring some turf shoes. Sixero showed up with his sneakers, because that's Sixero. And we're sitting in this locker room that can't be, like, it's a quarter of the size of the room that we're in right now. And Atiba Hutchinson is a worldwide star of the game of football. He's sitting in this locker room with retired guys. There were some big names. I think Stahl Terry was there as well. And Sid's going like, what the hell am I going to do? I got running shoes. We're playing with legit pros on turf. And Atiba Hutchinson looks at Sid and goes, sorry, you don't have boots? And Sid's like, no, well, I have cleats, but I did, you know, I didn't know. I just had the, I wasn't sure. And Atiba goes, here, huh? Take these. And Sid was like, what? He goes, yeah, I'll go get another pair. I got another pair. And Atiba Hutchinson, one of the greatest players that this country has ever produced, sitting in this dinky little dressing room at Birchmount Stadium in the Borough of Scars, handed Sixero a pair of boots. And I was just like, this guy, like, he could have just been like, why the hell am I here? And instead, he was like, here's my boots. You can wear them for the game. I'll go find another pair.
An absolute beauty. And did you know that when Atiba Hutchinson scores, he's a beauty.
Yeah.
Eighth goal for Canada last night. They've never lost when he scores. That's five wins. That's and three draws.
Right. Atiba is a part of that guts and glory that I love of this team. And that is a perfect start. A perfect win, near perfect window. And if Honduras, who led the United States 1-0 at the half, ended up losing 4-1, kid came in there and absolutely dominated for the United States, that could have been absolutely perfect, but this is a really good start for Canada. Really good start.
So it's all sunshine and lollipops for the Canadian men's soccer squad after last night, except did you happen to hear the post-game comments from Milion Borjan?
You know what? I know that there are people who are pointing to this as we need something here. I'm going to play you this clip, and then I want the people at home to hear this clip too, and then I'm going to give you my take on it. Here's Milion Borjan, who plays for Red Star Belgrade. He's been in and around this program for a long time, played at a very high level. Here's what he said after the game.
Thank you to all the fans that came, like Canadian fans, and we need more of this. We need Canada to wake up, you know, to support this team, because this team can go a long way. World Cup is just right there, you know, we're 1 foot inside, you know, we just have to keep going like this, and this stadium has to be full of red, not blue, green, or whatever. It has to be red, all red, Canadian fans.
I understand it. I also understand the city that I grew up in, very multicultural. You're never going to get that. But I'm going to tell you right here, right now, this Canadian run could set up maybe one of the most unprecedented runs of change in a sport in a country that I have ever seen. I could see soccer, given where the women were this summer and are currently, which is the best in the world.
On top.
And this men's team and how many good young players are in the system. I mean, when I was young, you had the Toronto Lynx and the Vancouver Whitecaps or 86. Like, it just was nowhere close to the culture that you have here. I could see this group of soccer fans growing faster than, like, when Bianca Andreescu won the U.S. Open, came in here, there was like this groundswell of tennis that it was palpable, you could feel it. I got a feeling, and it might not be this 2022 World Cup, I got a feeling that we're going to see this in soccer, where it grows unbelievably in a short period of time, because the red of Canada is going to mean so much. And I wouldn't be surprised, Milan, if in, you know, by the end of, I think this is going to end in March. Like, this is going to be quick. That you're not going to walk into a stadium and go, holy bleep, this is Canadian soccer. That's how quick it's going
to
go.
That story continues, absolutely. Something that we're going to be talking about for a while, like you mentioned. Sir. So from football to football, the first ever 17-game NFL regular season kicks off tonight with the defending Super Bowl champion Buccaneers hosting the Dallas Cowboys. After sitting out all of the preseason, Dak Prescott, he'll play in his first game since that gruesome ankle injury against the Giants in week 5 of last season. Tom Brady, by the way, he's going to become the first quarterback ever to make 300 career starts. Expectations, I'd say they're high for Brady and the Bucs. Some people even talking about a possible 17-0 season. It's the first ever 17-week season. Timmy. Would you be interested, would you care to make a bold prediction for this NFL
season? We've got Jonathan Vilma coming up in mere moments from now. I'm going to hold on to my NFL bold prediction. I'm going to go to Mike, who tweeted in when we asked, what's your NFL bold prediction of the year? And he said, Bears win the Super Bowl behind Justin Fields. Wow, that's an interesting one. Brandon, Zach Wilson wins the Rookie of the Year, leads the Jets to a wild card berth. First part of that, I can stomach. Second part of that, getting close. Ricky Romero, friend of the show, former Jays All-Star, Niners win the Super Bowl. They could be better, Ricky. They could be better. And Troy, the Washington football team finally gets a name, the Washington Elks. Got it good, and since you understood, send them in at Tim and Friends. My friend Kevin Mickey will sort through them, and we later in the show will give you our NFL bold predictions of the year. Still to come, Canada's most decorated Olympian, Penny Oleksiak, joins us live. John Wertheim from Flushing ahead of Layla's U.S. Open semifinal. Ben Nicholson-Smith as the Jays look for a four-game sweep in the Bronx. But up next, as mentioned, season opener hours away. Jonathan Vilma helps us preview our final division, the NFC South, and Tom Brady. Tim and Friends.
He hits it hard to left field, and this one's going to go. How about number 41 for Vladdy Guerrero?
Boy, what a thing of beauty that was.
We have a chance to win every night. You know, now our offense is doing great. Our defense is doing great. So, yeah, we're playing great baseball.
Sox looking for some magic. Down a run.
Fighter, and she has fire in her eyes right now.
What a Cinderella story this has been.
What is it that they're feeding you up north?
I would say it's the maple syrup.
Smell it, kids. Football is finally here. Well, at least the NFL variety. That's right, kids. Season kicks off tonight with the defending Super Bowl champ Buccaneers taking on the Cowboys. So, fittingly, we wrap up our divisional previews with the NFC South, where the Saints have ruled the roost for the last 4 years. But after winning the title last season, it's probably the Bucs' time to dominate. Safe to say, since the aforementioned Saints are onboarding a new quarterback and the Panthers and Falcons are still the Panthers and Falcons, the Bucs are ready to dominate. With more, here's Anthony Caminiti.
In a way, a torch was passed in the NFC South last year. The Saints won the division, but it was the Bucs who proved to be on a different level, winning it all while beating New Orleans in the process. That was the last time Drew Brees would ever wear an NFL uniform. That means it's time for LASIK Jameis in New Orleans.
Winston will load up and throw it down the middle of the field. It is caught! Touchdown!
The former number one pick beat out Taysom Hill to become the successor for Brees. Jameis will face some early challenges. Michael Thomas is out for at least 6 weeks, and the team could be relocated for up to a month in the aftermath of Hurricane Ida. Can Winston reel in the turnovers and resurrect his career? There's another QB looking to re-spark his career in Carolina. Sam Darnold is hoping to be the present and future of the Panthers. He's surrounded by quality weapons and a young, talented defense. And oh yeah, that Christian McCaffrey guy should help a bit too.
Oh my goodness.
Wow. Just an awesome football player. What a catch by Christian McCaffrey.
Falcons new head coach Arthur Smith is hoping to rejuvenate Matt Ryan the same way he did Ryan Tannehill in Tennessee. But being without Julio Jones for the first time in 10 years begs the question, what will this offense look like in 2021? Look, if we're being honest here, all these teams are likely playing for second place in this division. The Buccaneers are bringing pretty much everybody back from their Super Bowl team last season, and now there's no learning curve to deal with in Tampa. We should have all learned this lesson by now. Never count out Tom Brady.
You know what ring is my favorite one? My favorite ring is the next one. The next one.
If you come at the king, you best not miss. Dak and the boys are the first ones with a shot at the kings of the South here to help us figure out who's got the best shot to knock off those kings of the South. Is a former three-time Pro Bowler, a Super Bowl champion, a first-team All-American at the U, now a rising star at Fox Sports, Jonathan Vilma. Welcome to Tim and Friends. Thanks a lot for doing this.
Oh, anytime, Tim. Talking about the NFC South, I got to join in, right?
Yes, please. Yes, please. So who's got the best shot at knocking off what seems to be everyone's favorite in the Bucs?
It would be New Orleans. The New Orleans, we talked about Drew Brees, he's not there anymore. Jameis Winston, he did throw as many interceptions as anybody could have ever hoped for, wished for in a nightmare. But he also threw for 5,000 yards when he was with Tampa Bay. I'm sure he's learned a lot under Drew Brees, and you still have that formidable defense that's carried the Saints in times when Drew Brees was injured. You also have Alvin Kamara that we didn't mention, who's one of the best, if not the best, running backs as a pass-catching receiver and a running back. And then you talk about the completion of the coaching staff. Sean Payton's been there, the consistency. So when you have a team from top to bottom that's very, very good, competitive, been in the playoffs, won divisions, the only unknown is Jameis Winston. If he performs, they give Tampa Bay the best challenge in winning that division.
Yeah, that's like getting the keys to the Beamer. So let me ask you this, because – all 22 starters return from a Super Bowl team. I was trying to find the last time that happened, and it's like the late 70s with the Oakland Raiders. Like, how do you think that there's a chance that New Orleans knocks them off, or do you see the Bucs running away with this?
Now, there's definitely a chance the Saints can knock them off, but it won't be because of the Saints. It's going to be because of the complacency or lack thereof with the Bucs throughout this offseason, right? You know, you have Tom Brady. He's been there, done that seven times, continues to just push the envelope and show everyone why he's the best to have ever played the game. The other guys around him, though, this is their first time winning the Super Bowl, first time getting a taste of the playoffs, first time having success. How did they handle that in the offseason? Because, yeah, as much as Brady wants to lead and command, you're dealing with 23, 25-year-old young men that have just had literally been the top of the top, had the epitome of what it is to be successful in the NFL. How did they come back and respond? And if they responded well and they come with the challenge of wanting to prove themselves again to win another title, then it's theirs to take. If not, you're going to see unforced errors. You're going to see games where they play down to their opponent's level and kind of scratch your head like, how are they losing this game, or why is it even this close? If that were to happen, you could see the Saints creep in and take over for that division.
You know, it's funny. We had former coach John Fox on the show yesterday, and he said, how do teams respond to adversity and how do they respond to prosperity? And I had never really thought of that. But in the game of football, that's a big thing. Like, when things start going your way, how do you respond to that? Because it's not always easy. Sometimes those headlines lie to you a little bit.
Oh, I know. Trust me. I had the good fortune of going on a 32-game win streak when I was at the University of Miami. I won the Super Bowl with the Saints. And I remember times where guys would take a rep off. Right. Or they wouldn't practice as hard because, oh, I got it, right? That was the common theme. I got it. We're good. And what you don't realize is when you're saying I got it, we're good, your actions still say you missed that rep or you missed that practice. There's another team, another player on another team somewhere that's not missing that rep. He's practicing harder. He's getting the extra rep. He's getting the extra film work. And you got to understand that talent is all right there. So the difference is the mentality, the execution, and the want to. And if you don't have that, and if you can't deliver that week in and week out, you're going to lose.
All right. I know he only eats water and massages his feet a lot, but Father Time is unbeaten, right? Like, Tom Brady can't keep doing this, can he?
Look, I have been on a secret mission to find out what it is that he is actually taking that I don't even want to snitch on him, Tim.
Yeah.
I just take some of it for myself.
Right.
And I'm going to go.
I'm in.
To the league, I'm gonna play another 10 years, 5 Pro Bowls, something like that. Like, you know, it's unheard of, right? And I keep saying no, but I'm not gonna doubt this man. He gets better and better. He's leading teams to not just playoffs, to Super Bowls and winning them. You know, there's no way I'm gonna doubt him until, frankly, he calls it. Once he calls it, then I'll say something. Until then, I'm not going to doubt him.
The road is littered with dudes who have bet against Tom Brady and lost. All right, so let's move on to the Panthers here. And, like, listen, Christian McCaffrey's really good. And I don't know why. Like, when I was young, and I'm getting, as you can tell by my hairline, I'm getting up there. I'm 45. Come after me. I'm a man. Whenever great backs were putting up huge numbers, whether it was Walter Payton in his prime or Eric, it always seemed to be on mediocre teams. And I feel like that's the case with this Carolina team, is this, they're a middling team, and Christian could do everything and anything and be the first overall pick in your fantasy pool, and this team's still not great.
Yeah, you hit it on the head, and it's probably the reason for it, or what do you call it, self-fulfilling prophecies, yeah. Where you have such a great player that you use him so much that you don't use your other players. And then all of a sudden you get into a position where you're facing teams that have good players and they can kind of share the load defensively when it comes to guarding him, right? Because, you know, I faced guys where we mentioned Julio Jones, I faced Matt Ryan. When these guys were in their prime, we said, look, we can't stop them. We're going to slow them down. That's the name of the game. They're too good to stop. We're going to slow them down. And this is what happens with Christian McCaffrey, where he's going to put up great numbers. You're not going to stop him. You'll slow him down with about four or five guys defensively that will rotate, you know, assignments on him in coverage and in the run game. And then from there, you don't know what else they have, because so much of their offense is built around Christian McCaffrey. So you'll see these gaudy numbers, but it's imbalance. You have to have balance offensively, and the Panthers need to find that balance, because, you know, when he was out, it was like they were lost without him, right? Yeah. And then now he's back, and they're like, yes, let's go ahead and you know, ride this horse all the way. And you can't do that. And in this day and age, you have to have a really, really good player, and then you have to be smart enough to know, how are you going to use him as a decoy, right, to be able to have success on the other side with your receivers or another running back or a tight end to be able to win games.
Yeah, without a doubt, to make those around him even better. And I left out my favorite of all time, Barry Sanders, who never could get over, greatest back I've ever seen in my life, yeah, could never get over the hump. Yeah. All right, you mentioned Julio Jones. You mentioned Matt Ryan. This ain't your pop's Falcons. This ain't your older brother's Falcons. What do you see coming out of Atlanta this year?
You know, I see an improved defense. Offensively, there are a lot of question marks. And it goes back to what you just said. When it wasn't just Julio Jones was a good player. Julio Jones was a great player, a great wide receiver. Like, Julio Jones struck fear in cornerbacks. He struck fear in defensive coordinators. He struck fear in linebackers if you had to cover him in cover two, right? And I know this from experience, that I'd look and be like, is he there? All right. Okay. All right. Good. Right. So when you lose a player like that, there's so much production, and it goes back to the decoy, the mentality that I mentioned, not just him producing for you, but then also having defenses have to rotate their coverage. And then now you can expose a defense on the other side with your other players, because Julio Jones is over there and he's so good. When you don't have that, I don't know where Atlanta goes offensively. And that's why I said, I look on the defensive side and I say, all right, they understand the position they're in, right? They've been through the OTAs, mini camps, training camps, preseason. Defensively, you know when you're gonna have to lead this charge, right? Matt Ryan he's getting up there. He's not Tom Brady, and not by any stretch of the imagination. He's still a good quarterback, but there's gonna be a lot of reliance on that defense to win games for him or keep them in games.
Right. I know you got the Seahawks and the Colts live on Fox this weekend, but I got to ask one question about tonight's game. And I was as big a fan of Dak Prescott last year as anyone on planet Earth. Can he pick it up where he left off? Because that's asking a lot in my mind.
That is asking a lot. And I wouldn't put that pressure on Dak so early in the season. What I would do is ride the bell cow, Ezekiel Elliott,
yeah,
who lost weight. He looks good. He looks quicker. He looks fresh. Watched him where he said, look, I need to get down to my college playing days that weight. And when he was at Ohio State, if anyone wants to know how good he is, he was one of the backs that ran for not 100, but 200 yards against that vaunted Alabama defense to win a national title. So he is every bit as good, if he is every bit as good as he was back then and in his early years with the Cowboys, I'd say put that offensive line to work, put him to work. Yeah. Dak Prescott kind of work his way into the season, because if you start off early and it doesn't go well, there's no going back. That's it. You're done.
Feed Zeke the ball. Don't feed Zeke anything else. Let him be at that about I guess it would be 25, 30. Is that what he's best at?
Yeah. Let him stay down. Stay down there, man.
Hey, Jonathan, great catching up with you. Love talking football with you. I could do it for another hour, but we run out of time. Thank you very much for doing this, and hopefully do it down the road.
Thanks, Tim. Look forward to it.
Be well. There is Jonathan Vilmon. Again, you can see him, Seahawks, Colts, Fox Sports. This weekend, he will have the call. Time for a break. We will talk Toronto Blue Jays next. They look for a four-game sweep in the Bronx. They've pulled the tarps off. Stop raining for now. They win tonight. It'll just be a half game back of the Yankees in the wild card chase. Baseball! Ben Nicholson-Smith next on Tim and Friends.
Everybody knows how big this series is.
Bringing a high fly ball to left field. This ball is going to go. Grand slam home run. Marcus Semien is on fire. Blue Jays shut out the Yankees 8-0.
In a big series, that's how you want to start.
Holmes deals, and Kirk slugs one again out to deep right field. Stanton back, turning around. It's out of here.
Another home run for Alejandro Kirk. It's a two-jacket day.
Blue Jays get the first two in this series. You got to just keep the pedal to the metal.
Blue Jays trying to make it three in a row against the Yanks. Wow, he hits it hard to left field, and this one's going to go. How about number 41?
Vladimir Guerrero Jr. sizzles it to the seat. Out of there in a New York minute.
The Blue Jays extend their win streak to seven in a row.
And now they got a chance for a four-game sweep.
Four-game sweep could be complete tonight. Jays and Yankees on Sportsnet. Joining us to discuss is Ben Nicholson-Smith, BNS from the At the Letters podcast. Holy crap. Like, I got no question. Just holy crap. Like, everything that has gone on. Like, the last time I talked to you, you possibly couldn't have drawn it out better since then for the Toronto Blue Jays.
100%. I mean, they are just winning every game. It doesn't get better than that. I mean, they're playing great baseball right now. They're hitting well. They're pitching well. Some of the little flaws in this team that we've seen at times exposed to a huge degree have been pushed to the side because they've been doing so many other things well. And, you know, of course, they're going to lose another game this season. But with 24 games still left to play, they are putting themselves in an amazing position here in the wild card race, putting tons of pressure on the Yankees, Red Sox, and really doing their part to keep this thing interesting.
Earlier today, I was talking to my friend Kevin Mickey in studio, and Kevin was asking me what I was worried about. And I said, no, I'm not doing this. I'm not living in the past. I'm not projecting the future. The mindfulness of the day has me living in the present. And the woosah of this moment, Ben Nicholson-Smith, is that they are playing as good, if not better, than anyone in Major League Baseball. Could we ever impart that on the fans, or am I just running up a hill that will never end?
I think you're right, and I don't know if that message lands or not, but they're playing amazing right now. They're really good. They're a great team. They're playing some great baseball, and here we are in the last few weeks of September. This is really fun. I mean, for me, to follow baseball, you know, we watch in April when it's Tommy Malone and Tanner Roark. We watch in May, you know, when it's these random quad A relievers. But, you know, it's more fun in September. It's a lot more fun right now, and to me, this is the best time of year. I mean, the playoffs are good, too. But we're at that point where you're checking in every day, who's available out of the bullpen, what kind of options do they have off the bench. The details matter, and that makes baseball so much fun.
That's what I love about baseball, and it's kind of like it's an acquired taste for me. I feel like you learn to appreciate all of that nuance as you get older or as you're integrated into the game of baseball. Like, if it comes at a young age, maybe you get it quicker. But that's what's beautiful about the game, is that it is 162, and that it is, you play all these games just to get to a point where you can enjoy it the way we're enjoying it right now.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, you think about a guy like Julian Merriweather, and when he came in to the games in April, well, okay, it was pretty fun to watch, and it was, you know, we're wondering what this could mean. Well, now here we are. We know what it means. We know what the significance is. So when he returns, might be tonight, Charlie Montoyo saying a few minutes ago that, you know, he could go to Merriweather in leverage as soon as today at Yankee Stadium. But whenever that moment is, it's going to carry a lot more significance, not in the sense of what if, but what does it mean right now for a team that's right in the middle of it?
Okay, so Charlie Montoyo spoke on his Zoom, I guess, just a while ago. Any other news besides, it looks like Romano's down, right, because he's pitched 2 days in a row, and that's why Merriweather might see that action. Was there any news on Springer, too?
He said that Charlie Montoyo said that Springer's doing better, and he was taking batting practice as we were speaking. I know we've heard that a lot, Tim. I'm sure, yeah, people are probably tired of that one.
I'm sorry.
But yeah, he's doing better. So he said he could be in the lineup as soon as tomorrow, and that's a good thing. I mean, these Yankees games are huge, but then four against Baltimore, that's a chance to add even more wins on.
It almost feels like they need, and I know this is ridiculous to say in the middle of a seven-game winning streak in 10 of your last 11, but it almost feels like they need to make as much hay as possible because the Red Sox are going to get a couple games here coming up against good teams, and then it eases up a little bit. And they'll get some of those guys who are on that COVID list back. Like, it feels like both the Yankees and the Red Sox are in the thick of the bleep right now, and the Jays need to make up as many games as they possibly can.
It's time to get greedy, really. Like, you have to win as much as you possibly can. You know, they're going to need probably 90, 91 wins. So they're still a ways away from that, 15, 14 wins away. They need to take as many as they possibly can. That means they have to be aggressive with the bullpen, with Springer to an extent. I mean, they manage him differently than they would in April. So it's a lot of fun to watch.
Okay, so what part of this run for you has been, I don't want to say surprising, maybe has planted some seeds that the Jays are on the right track no matter how this ends? So, like, what are the things that you have seen along the way that you think, no matter how this works out, could pay some dividends down the road?
I always go back to Vladdy with, right, you know, this season and this team. I mean, how good is he at age 22 to be having a triple crown season, essentially, you know, 41 home runs. There he is last night off Chapman. I mean, you think about how hard it is to hit 40 homers ever, how rare it is to do that at age 22, how few guys do that while also leading the league in batting average and OPS. It is extremely rare. And what we're seeing from Vlad is historic.
Is Jordan Romano the undisputed closer next year?
I would think so, but I also think there's got to be a chance that the Jays go out and try to sign some guys, yeah, you know, and I think you have to do it. I don't think that this bullpen, you know, might be good enough for right now, but going into the offseason, you still need to be looking to sign three relievers.
Okay, so in New York, what's the reaction to this season for the New York Yankees? I mean, obviously it has been up and down and now back down. What's been the reaction over the last little while in New York as the Jays are coming in the rearview mirror?
I mean, it's been an up and down season, I think, for the Yankees as well as the Jays. I mean, around baseball, it's, you know, I think getting back to 162 does remind us, like, just how many ebbs and flows there are. And for the Yankees, yeah, it's been a very, very difficult stretch lately. We've seen a lot of underperformance from some key guys, you know, whether it is a Luke Voit at times or Gio Urshela at times. DJ LeMahieu is really underperformed. So it's hard to make sense of to an extent. I still think the Yankees are a pretty scary team and a very good team, but right now they're not playing like it.
It's crazy to look at that lineup and think that they're struggling to hit the ball.
It's wild. Yeah, I mean, they should be so good. They should be one of the best teams offensively in baseball. And again, like, I still think they are, honestly. Like, yeah, you look at some teams and you think, you know, I don't truly believe that this team has shown what it is so far.
What do you make of the Boston Red Sox and what they're going through right now?
Well, it's not good. I mean, that's saying the obvious right there. I think it's going to be interesting to see when they come back how far behind from a pacing standpoint, from a timing standpoint, these players are. Because, you know, we saw it with Teoscar. We saw it with Steven Matz. It's one thing to come back and pass a COVID test. Right. It's another thing to come back and be ready to contribute against the game's best players with no rehab games. So, I mean, that's a real question for me with the Red Sox.
Benny, always great catching up with you. Anything else from Montoyo earlier? I know I circled a couple of things that I was seeing pop by down the Twitter machine as we were hosting this show, but I should ask you before I let you go, is there anything else from Montoyo?
Bit of a lineup change too. They have they've bumped the top three up essentially. So Bichette, obviously with Vladdy and right, Semien in that top three. We've seen Dickerson up there in the past, but you know, I think that'll be an ongoing effort basically until Springer comes up to mix and match and make sure they have a pretty good one through nine.
Boy, Dickerson quietly a great little pickup, eh?
Oh, and Simber. I mean, in that one trade, right? Like you made a lot of a difference with that one deal. And, you know, for Joe Panik, I think that's one the Jays are probably pretty happy with.
Yeah, that is unbelievable. Hey, man, thanks for doing this. Always great catching up with you. And we'll see if the old Swiffer comes out in that Blue Jay Central studio with Jamie and Joe tonight.
I'll be watching. Thanks, Tim. Have a good one.
Be well. There is Ben Nicholson-Smith. Are you a fan, Kevin Mickey, of sometimes I know Jamie has different brooms available to him in different studio settings. Down at the Dome, seems like they've got that old school broom that your mom has in your kitchen.
He's got that tucked away.
Yeah, and every once in a while, when he comes back in this studio, just down the road, it becomes a Swiffer. Yep. Which one are you a fan of?
I like the Swiffer. It's new. It's modern. Right. It's interesting, unique. You know, you recognize it right away. You said, the Swiffer. It's a quality product.
I don't know if it's like a four-game thing versus a three-game thing.
For the four-game, you get the Swiffer Wet Jet.
Yes.
Without
a doubt. I'm with you on that. And we have just created a new sponsorship for Blue Jay Central and Jamie Campbell. More Jays talk coming up. Buck and Tabby will join us to get you set for it. But up next, Canada's most decorated Olympian. I'm looking forward to this. Penny Oleksiak stops by to discuss her experience in Tokyo and simply being amazing at the age of 21. Penny Oleksiak after this, Tim and Friends. Sports Net!
Tim and Friends, time for Tim and Friends. Tim and Friends. Tim and Friends, time for Tim and Friends. Tim and Friends.
And now, time for real sports talk with Jim McAuliffe. Friends of the show.
Those friends of the show include Kevin Mickey in for Jesse Rubinoff, wishing him a wonderful bachelor party. He is off for 2 days north of the city of Toronto. We won't ask what he's up to or FaceTime him. Or will we? Sheepdogs, thank you very much. Back for hour number two. Tim and Friends, full hour on Sportsnet 360, which includes John Wertheim from Flushing, New York, ahead of Layla Annie Fernandez, U.S. Open semifinal. We've also got Penny Oleksiak dropping by in just moments from now. Sportsnet, we're with you until 6:30 Eastern, ahead of the Blue Jays. And Blue Jays Central, it is the Yankees and the Bluebirds, 4-4 from the Bronx. Jays looking for their 8th straight win and 4th straight in the Bronx. Everything clicking for the Bluebirds. They're only a game and a half out of a playoff spot entering tonight. Blue Jay Central again, 6:30 Eastern. Jamie and Joe, the broom could come out. Maybe even the Swiffer. Plenty more pregame coverage coming up later on in the show. Jays, of course, fighting with the A's for one of those playoff spots. Check this out. Josh Harrison falls off a pitch. Guy can't make the catch, but where does it end up? This could be the most embarrassing highlight in the history of time. My guy misses the foul ball, and it lands in his fanny pack. Could there be anything more embarrassing in the history of planet Earth, Kevin Mickey, than missing a foul ball hit to you and having it land in your fanny pack? 1-0 Oakland, tied at one after this play. No?
Embarrassing or super good advertisement for fanny packs? So convenient, you'll catch foul balls not even knowing
it. There's no good advertisement for a fanny pack.
What about The Rock? The Rock wearing his fanny pack?
Right, and he got absolutely roasted. It's 3-1 Athletics, by the way, so it looks like the standings could change. Jays enter tonight 2 games back of the Red Sox, who are off today, and as mentioned, 1.5 back of the Yankees. Mariners a game behind the Jays. While the A's, as mentioned, things are about to change based on the outcome of, honestly, like cut or uncut fanny packs, it's just immediately cut unless you're a kid and you've got all of the things that you need in a global pandemic, because all the kids are wearing fanny packs to school now. They got the masks, they got the sanitizers, they got everything in the fanny pack. But grown-ass man with a fanny pack.
So here's what I'll say about fanny packs. I have seen many people, both genders, sporting them, going out to bars in their late 20s, early 30s. They go out to restaurants, have a casual beer.
Not around
beer.
Their waist, like maybe over
it's,
the shoulder.
It's around the shoulder. That's right. What they're doing.
Cool
they're
guy, wearing... fanny pack around the shoulder.
Okay, so we're accepting the around the shoulder then, but not around the waist.
I don't know. I just, for me, fanny packs of all kinds, if worn properly around the waist, not a fan.
I mean, it looked like the guy also potentially got hit in the groin by that baseball. So yeah. That could have been the worst part about it.
That's the trifecta.
Yeah.
Dropped it. Fanny pack, and it hit him in the groin. In 5 short years, my next guest has gone from a relatively unknown 16-year-old to this country's most decorated Olympian ever. Like forever, ever. And she's 21 years old. Penny Oleksiak grew up in Toronto as the youngest of 5 children, but I think that's the only time she has ever come last. In fact, her story is full of firsts. She first burst onto the scene in the Rio Olympics 2016, where she won 4 medals, setting 1 Olympic record and 5 Canadian records. She won Canada's first medal of the Games and became the first Canadian to win a medal in each of the first 2 days of the Olympics. The first athlete born in the 2000s to win an individual gold, the first Canadian to win 4 medals at 1 Olympics, and she followed that up with 3 medals this summer in Tokyo. Once again, winning Canada's first medal of the Games and becoming the first Canadian ever to win 7 Olympic medals. All this at 21. Safe to say she's still got plenty of firsts ahead of her. And while it pales in comparison, of course, to the other firsts, it's also her first time on Tim and Friends. Ladies and gentlemen, help me welcome Penny Oleksiak to the show. Penny, thank you so much for doing this.
Hello.
How are you?
Good, how are you?
I am very well, thank you. What's it like to hear some media dude bring you on and say the words Canada's most decorated Olympian like ever? Has that sunk in yet?
I don't know. I don't know if it's fully sunk in. Sorry, my dog is being loud over here.
Okay, what's your dog's name?
Bean.
Bean.
He's one of two. But I don't know. It's definitely weird, especially just thinking of myself as like regular 16-year-old Penny. It's very weird.
No longer a regular 16-year-old Penny, though. Like 21.
I don't know. That's how I always kind of see myself. Is like I always say I see myself like I saw myself in grade 9.
I do the same, and it was with a lot more hair. Listen, I watched a bunch of interviews with you before doing this, and what struck me is kind of this balance of confidence and humility, which I think a lot of people like. But do you realize that with your accomplishments and your honesty getting to those accomplishments that you've inspired a lot of folks?
I mean, I hope I have. I'm not out here like trying to every day inspire people as much as I would like to. That's not my goal when I wake up. But when I wake up, I just try and be the best athlete, best person I can be that day and see how I can better myself that day. So if that's inspiring people, and if I'm inspiring people to do things that they've never really thought of doing, and then that makes me really happy.
That's very cool collateral damage. my favorite interview was poolside 7th medal and the 4x100, your teammates sharing that moment with you, really cool, and how proud they seem to be in your accomplishments. What did it mean to you to share that with a team in what is sometimes a very individual sport?
Yeah, I mean, I've always loved the team aspect of swimming. I think it can become such a like individual sport, and then just to be able to step up on those relays and race with girls that you train with and girls that you compete with in training is really cool. And just to be able to get a medal with those girls and see how far you've all come and see how hard that everyone has worked is always so inspiring to me and so motivating. So I just love being able to get medals with the girls that I train with. It's so fun.
That's awesome. Kylie Mash dropping the Spicy P nickname. Is that sticking? Is that something you wish wouldn't stick? Where are we on Spicy P?
I was honestly thinking about that today. I saw a photo of Pascal Siakam, and I was like, oh, I hope he doesn't hate me. That was my only thought.
Is Bean a pug or is Bean a bulldog? I'm seeing like just a smidge of Bean right now.
This is Bean. He's a
Oh, nice.
Frenchie Boston Terrier, and he's very, Very odd, very awkward.
He's a good looking fella. And don't worry, I hosted a show from my basement, and my dog, Snoop Dogg, made several appearances on the show. So we're good with any dogs on this show. The other thing that struck me was you talking about how young this crew was and how, like, this is just a start, like 2024, 2028, and that you guys are on the come up. And I grew up in a hockey family, kind of like you, youngest of four, and I loved all sports. And I never understood why we as Canadians had this swagger around hockey, like nobody was ever going to beat us, and didn't take it over to other sports. And I feel like that's changing right now. Is that something you always had, something you noticed, something you wanted to bring? Where does that come from for you?
For me, I think it kind of just stems from how I was raised. Like, I was always raised to be good at what I was doing, and if I was going to do something, to do it properly and really work at it and be the best at it if it was something that I loved to do. So for me, it was just like how I was raised. My brother was the same. My sister's the exact same. And I think I've kind of tried to show that in my racing and show that I'm going to put it all out there all the time. And I think, like you said, kind of like more and more Canadians have been popping up on the scene in different sports. And I think it's just this confidence now that people have in Canada, just showing that we aren't just a hockey nation. We are a nation full of, like, such incredible athletes in every sport, pretty much.
I feel like, and I've said it a couple times on the show over the last little while, I feel like Canadian women right now have come to kick ass and chew bubble gum, and they're all out of bubble gum. Like, it's just, it's unbelievable to see what was done in Tokyo. I know you were down in Flushing. Like, do you draw anything from athletes in other sports? Were you, you know, kind of clued into what the women's soccer team were doing or what Bianca or Layla is doing? Like, how much of that do you see in the periphery of what you're doing?
I think for the most part, I kind of try to, like, stay away from looking at sports too much because that's, like, my everyday kind of thing. And especially after Tokyo, I've kind of taken a little bit of a break. But I did go to the U.S. Open, and I saw Bianca play, and I just saw her passion and her fire. And that was amazing to watch, especially in person. And I've been watching Layla a little bit and seeing, like, she's been insane this whole time. And I mean, it's just so fun to go out there and watch and see people accomplish great things and see the passion that they have for their sport. That's like, that brings out so much, like, motivation for me.
That's literally why I love sports. Like, just, yeah. And seeing people overcome the adversity that's thrown at them to do it. And I think about you guys and that team, and did the struggles of trying to train in a pandemic make it sweeter when the Canadian team did as well as it did in Tokyo?
I think so. Yeah. I think it was really difficult for us to be out of the water for 4 months, because that's totally unheard of in swimming. You only are out usually for 2 weeks of a whole year. So we were out for 4 months, came back, and our coach kind of told us, like, you're pretty much at this point, you have a year to train for the Olympics and you have to get ready for it. And other people might have an advantage on you, but there's literally nothing you can do about it. You need to do the best with what we have. And I think we did that. We all went in every single day. Everyone worked really, really hard and pushed each other day in, day out, which was crazy. Like, everyone, no one was slacking off the whole year. And just to go to the Olympics, and our center, like, from Ontario on the Canadian team, we brought home 15 medals on our own, which was insane. So it was really awesome to just kind of see that work and then see that payback at the end of the year.
I know you took some time off from swimming back in 2018. How important, looking back now, was that for you?
I definitely needed that. I think that's something I kind of learned from 2016. I didn't take a break. I literally went back straight into school, straight into swimming. And I ended up getting very overwhelmed and not really enjoying it anymore. And I was like 17, 18, which is kind of scary to not be enjoying the sport that you love to do and you're good at. So I took that time off then, and it just helped me really assess what I wanted to do and really find my love for swimming again. And then when we had those 4 months off, when the pandemic first hit, that was the same kind of thing. I was kind of hitting a wall in 2020, and then having that break to really just focus on myself and better myself and really figure out my passion for swimming again has been really good. And then now I'm again taking another like month and a half off, and I'm trying to kind of do the same thing. And I think I've learned that just from 2016, I need to like really let myself reset after a big thing.
Without a doubt, like I've seen the pressure of expectations set a lot of great athletes back. In fact, I've seen it in my family. When you see someone like Simone Biles or say Naomi Osaka at Flushing at the U.S. Open talk about needing a break, like have you ever thought about reaching out, or do you have any advice, especially when you know how many people out there just don't understand what a high level athlete is going through?
Yeah, I think that's something that definitely is like very prevalent in the athletics world right now. And it's actually pretty cool, I think, because it is a real thing. Like athletes are held to such a high standard just because they're good at what they do. And to be so young and so good at what you do has a ton of pressure, and there's so many people watching. So I think it's great that these girls especially are talking out about how they need a break and how there is too much pressure on them. And they're actually admitting to that, because that is how they can actually get past it themselves. So I think when people are really like tough on people for taking a break and everything, it's just, it's like they, no one really understands the kind of pressure that we all have. And it's more than just a few comments. It's mental and everything.
Yeah. And it can be from the outside. It can be from the inside. Okay, let's move on from that, because I understand expectations can be heavy, but with that pressure comes a little bit of privilege. Like, what's the coolest thing that you've been able to experience because of the privilege that comes with being Canada's most decorated Olympian of all time? Like, what's the one thing that is, what's the one door that's open to you where you're like, damn, I never thought I'd be able to do this at 19, 20, or 21? Is there one thing that jumps out at you?
I don't think there's one thing. I think like even after 2016, my whole world flipped upside down, and I've been living a totally different life than I would have been had I not done what I did in 2016. So for me, there's so many things. Like I went to Kenya with my family and my best friend to build schools. So that's just like, that's something we would have never done. We would have wanted to do, but couldn't like afford it or wouldn't be able to go. So I don't know. There's just so many things I can't even begin.
Well, that's, I mean, listen, building schools in Kenya is a wonderful start for that answer. So good on you. What's next for Penny Oleksiak? What am I going to see splashed across the at typical Penn IG feed for the next little while?
Well, holy cow, I don't even know. I'm honestly, I have a lot going on right now, and I'm still figuring out a lot of things because I have been avoiding the world for the last month of like Cabo and New York and Charlotte and everything. So I don't know. I'm starting things right now. So you're going to see a few things roll out, I think, soon.
So a couple more trips just for you before we start those new things?
Hopefully, maybe. I kind of want to get out of Toronto again.
if it was Cabo and New York for me, I would get out of Toronto too. Listen, I really enjoyed this. I wish you the best of the luck on the rest of the come up, and can't wait to see what's next. On behalf of the audience, thanks for doing this.
No, thank you so much.
There is Penny Oleksiak, the most decorated athlete in the history of Olympics in this country. All right, we've got, that's pretty cool, no, Mickey?
She is outstanding. What an outstanding young human being as well.
Yeah, like just the poise. And
what have you been able to do? It's like, oh, I got to throw the first pitch at a Jays game. Yeah. That was pretty cool. It's like, no, I got to go to Kenya and build schools.
Right.
It's amazing.
It makes me feel like a failure, honestly, at 45. To hear that at 21, it honestly makes me feel like a failure. We'll get your reaction to that interview. Yankees and Jays coming up on Sportsnet. After the break, we'll check in with Buck and Pat, who will call the game and get you set for Blue Jays Central. Tim and Friends rolls on right here on Sportsnet, Sportsnet 360. So true, building schools in Kenya. What am I doing here? Welcome back, Tim and Friends. Minutes away from Blue Jays Central on Sportsnet. Jamie and Joe got you covered. Can the Jays make it 8 straight? Jose Barrios on the mound. Buck and Tabby on the call. Let's check in with them now. Gentlemen, take it away.
Tim, the Blue Jays bullpen took a lot of hits over the course of this season, and we were quick to criticize them when they wouldn't get the job done. Now they're pitching very well, and it's certainly time to praise them. They've done a great job during this great hot streak for the Blue Jays.
And it's a different bullpen than the one that started the season for the Blue Jays. Alek Manoah pitched into the sixth inning in yesterday's ball game, and then it was over to the bullpen. They needed 10 outs from the bullpen, and they got it. First out, Trevor Richards. He fell behind Gary Sanchez 3-0, came back, struck him out. His changeup has been dynamite so far this season. Then right after him, Adam Simber, what a revelation he has been since they got him from the Marlins. He pitched an inning and a third in yesterday's game and showed a little bit more zip on that fastball. And what I really like about what I saw from him yesterday, yeah, he got three strikeouts, the emotion, really getting into it. And you turn it over to Jordan Romano and things are going to be over. He has been outstanding for the Blue Jays, picked up his 16th save of the season with that great slider. And this is just something that has been building for the Blue Jays. That back end of the bullpen since August the 1st has been outstanding. You throw in Tim Mayza, who could close if he needed to. Jordan Romano, look at the numbers that these guys have put up since August the 1st. Now you add a possible Nate Pearson, a Julia Merriweather, some more power to the back end of that bullpen. These guys can't pitch every single night, and the Blue Jays are winning. That's why they've been pitching a lot. But if you can use those guys judiciously, get Pearson and Julia Merriweather into it, now you've got some power coming out of that pen, and that's when you get those lockdown innings.
Jordan Romano has pitched in back-to-back games here in New York. Tim Mayza is available tonight. Richards and Simber are kind of on the cusp, so we might see Nate Pearson get called upon to get some big outs for the Blue Jays tonight in this series finale. Tim?
Thank you very much, Buck. And we can, Kevin, Mickey, add maybe Julian Merriweather's name to that list of guys that might be looked upon in high-leverage situations tonight, depending on how it works out.
Yeah, with no Jordan Romano, it's what a great time to throw him in the Bronx. Big time win opportunity, sweep the Yankees.
What you really want is like a 4-run lead and then throw both those. So it's kind of like you are in the Bronx, there is something on the line, but maybe a little bit of a spread might help.
Remember that time that the Blue Jays, one of their big weaknesses was the bullpen?
Yeah.
And now the Blue Jays have the luxury of bringing out Julian Merriweather and Nate Pearson all of a sudden, guys who throw gas late. Yeah.
If they find whatever it was they had a year ago or at the start of the year in Merriweather's case, man, look out. Like, the starting pitching is enough to contend in any postseason game.
Mm-hmm.
If you had some real lights out in that bullpen, I mean, we could be talking about a miracle run here.
And we have.
And I'm not just saying that.
No. The Jays are looking for their first 7-game winning streak since 2016. People remember that year. They haven't won 8 straight since 11-game win streak in August of 2015. We remember that year.
Yeah.
Blue Jays fans certainly remember that year. Good omens.
We'll say so.
Yeah.
We'll see.
Just
a coincidence. One of the two.
Let's go good omens.
I'm trying
to spread the goodwill.
The WUSA. I forgot about it. I'm sorry.
One of the teams that the Jays are trying to keep below them, the Oakland A's. We saw some highlights earlier.
my guy with the fanny pack.
I was going to say, we saw highlights. The thing that we remember, though, is the fanny pack.
Trying to make
the catch of this foul ball, misses it. It goes into his fanny pack whilst also getting hit in the groin. He doesn't seem too bothered by it, though. Picks it up. Yay, we've done it. Anyways,
hold on a second. Okay. There's a lot of layers to this onion.
Like, let's break it down.
The whole thing. Like, it looks like he's at a baseball game, and it looks like he's going in the outback to hunt alligators. Like, what the hell are you doing? And two, like, in what? That's a massive. Like, that's not just a fanny pack. That's like, I don't know what the hell that is. Like, what has he got in there? What are you taking to a baseball game? Like, just get a backpack.
He wants the convenience of being able to access it right immediately. I don't know. He's got a rotisserie chicken inside of it.
Yeah, there seems to be something. There's like a Ziploc. He's got the grapes in there. He's got a cute. Look at the guy beside him going, oh, look, it landed in your fanny pack. And there's just so much to this. Like, I think this might be the most embarrassing highlight that I've ever seen. One, you drop a foul ball. Two, it lands in your fanny pack. Three, you're dressed like that. I don't know.
There are a lot of Tim and Friends tweeters.
You were going to say Tim and Citizens.
No, I was never going to say that. No, absolutely okay. Not.
I do it all the time.
No.
All right.
There are a lot of people sending us tweets at Tim and Friends saying they're defending the fanny pack.
Oh, really?
Yeah, we have fanny pack defenders. So we have Neil saying, seems to me that fanny pack guy was well prepared for whatever the day brought him. Fanny pack is uncut.
Wow. What's the difference? Can you explain for Neil and or me? And I'm just asking, I'm putting you in a tough spot. Like, what's the difference between a backpack and a fanny pack?
Fanny pack isn't as cumbersome on your back.
That thing was. Are you kidding me?
That one was rather large.
Okay,
yeah. That one's a little tough.
All right.
There are some.
Is he compensating? Move on. Keep going.
There are some relatively well-known people who have sported fanny packs in the past. Yeah. For instance, Jason sent us this. Hey, Tim McAuliffe, don't diss fanny packs. They're a lifesaver for guys like WWE superstar Edge. First of all, wearing a sweet throwback Ducks jersey.
Yeah, I like that.
And then he's got the fanny pack right there.
Come on.
Look at that.
Come on.
Pockets.
Pockets, Edge.
It was,
we know Adam. Edge. Pockets. Go ahead. Next one.
The most famous man to ever.
Yeah, we know that. All right.
I don't always wear a fanny pack. I rock it. The Rock, of course.
Right. Any more tweets here? We only got about 20 seconds left.
Matthew, not a fan. Matthew says, calling out fanny packs while wearing his Jordans in a suit. Not saying I'm against the Jordans in a suit, but I remember Tim also defending his Jordans in a suit as an older generation.
Nah, I just think there's nobody who actually likes fanny packs. Do you actually like fanny packs? You would wear a fanny pack.
No, I don't like them.
All right, time for Blue Jays Central on Sportsnet. I don't even think Jamie and Joe would wear the fanny. If you're going to an amusement park, maybe a fanny pack. Yankee Stadium, just put it in your pocket, son. We'll continue on Sportsnet 360. John Wertheim ahead of Layla's match in the semifinals at Flushing. Back in 60 seconds on 360 Sportsnet, Blue Jays Central.
Fernandez, an overnight sensation.
Layla Annie Fernandez is through to the second round at the U.S. Open.
The self-belief.
Just amazing.
Fernandez is into the third round.
Champion Naomi Osaka is out. Joy for Canada.
Canada must be going crazy.
She was outstanding in the biggest match of her life.
I wanted to stay on court a little bit longer. I wanted to put on a show for everybody here.
So we're all set. Angelique Kerber up against the teenage sensations over the last few days. Layla Fernandez from Canada.
Oh, what a forehand. Best of the match.
Wow.
We're starting to see what this young lady is made of, and it's very special.
Oh, what a return. The dream continues for Layla Fernandez. She has one foot in the final four.
She's a fighter, and she has fire in her eyes right now.
Oh, such good anticipation. Oh, can you believe it? What a Cinderella story this has been.
What is it that they're feeding you up north?
I would say it's the maple syrup.
Poutine, also an acceptable answer. Does it not seem to me, Kevin Mickey, like tennis would be a big fanny pack sport?
Absolutely.
Yes.
Tennis, and one of our producers, Jason Sands, says golf as well. And
yeah, walking around the 18 with a fanny pack on. Yeah. Tyler gave me one spot where a fanny pack might be acceptable.
Oh, okay.
He writes in and says, the fanny pack would have saved Molman from this football. Just saying. Maybe. Just like that man in Oakland was saved by the shot that went into his fanny pack.
Doink.
Molman may have been saved. All right, time to save me. And we'll do it with Sports Illustrated's John Wertheim, who is in and around Flushing and has been covering this event the entire way. John, do you see many fanny packs while walking around the U.S. Open and or other tennis tournaments that you cover?
I was going to say, this is not necessarily the most fashionable crowd, but I see no fanny packs, and we have a considerable sample size. So I think golf owns the fanny pack demographic.
I like it. We have left it alone in New York. I don't think the fanny pack goes over well there, but maybe I'm just one man. All right, how is Layla Annie Fernandez going over in New York? Because right now, there might not – the Jays have won – seven in a row. They're going for a sweep of the Yankees tonight, and Layla is stealing a lot of thunder right now.
We're just talking about this. What a month for Canadian sports as a collective. But yeah. No, Layla is sort of the toast of this tournament. And, you know, it's one of these things in sports. Sometimes you catch this wave in tennis. These crowds matter. If this is a tight match or if she's down, this has a material impact on the competition. So it's not just, hey, she's signing lots of autographs and taking lots of selfies. This could really benefit her tennis. I heard a rumor, as long as we're not on live TV, I won't say it. Steve Nash apparently will be in her box. I mean, the crowd filing in here right now will be 75% for her no matter what. And I just think it bears keeping in mind, this really impacts the competition. I think this can help her a lot.
You know, we saw Magic Johnson tweeting about a friend of the show, Brevin Knight, also former NBA player, tweet. What do you think it is about Layla that has captured the imagination of this tournament? Because she's not the only underdog making some real noise.
Yeah, I think some of it is physical. I mean, she's 5'6". You watch her play and there is, you know, she's not booming serves and winning points because she's so strong and powerful. There's a real feistiness. She's gotten popular with the crowds. I think she's been able to sort of build equity. You know, you beat Naomi Osaka, and it's a big upset, but let's see how the kid backs it up. Well, she's backed it up twice now, and now she's playing her fourth top 10 player in a row. And I think it's kind of built on itself. But I think a lot of this is, you know, she's charming, she plays to the crowd, but I think a lot of this is the fact, not just that she's young, but that she's undersized.
Right. There's a physical stature, rocky part of this underdog story here. So Sabalenka, tell me, I mean, it seems to me that this is one of the hotter players right now on tour. Like, this is a real tough matchup, as if the last three weren't. But it's another giant that Layla is going to have to slay here.
Yes. Sabalenka is Russian for kaboom. I mean, this is all power. And the bad news is that she could just blast Fernandez off the court. I mean, she can penetrate the court. She can hit through her. I mean, she may win this thing just with sheer power. If she's missing, she doesn't have a lot of extra gears. And that's a very dangerous position to be in against a clever, crafty defensive player, a lefty. I think this could either be a blowout for Sabalenka just on sheer force, or else Layla's got a real chance here because Sabalenka has no other gears. I mean, it's remember every shot is a power shot, that old commercial. She doesn't know how to throttle back, and if she's not hitting her targets, the player on the other side of the net can really take advantage of that.
It's interesting because you look at the last three matches for Layla, and while she was able to get past some giants of the game, it also took her three sets. Do you think that may, I know she's young, but could that wear a little thin for this match?
Yeah, I mean, she trains harder than any other player out here. I mean, now there have been all these stories circulating. She's the first one at the practice courts, and she'll lose a match, and then you'll see her, you know, on the bike or skipping rope. I think it's more the, I mean, keep in mind, too, at these events, you have a day off, so she's had these long matches, but she's had an extra day to recover. I think it's just, it's much more the occasion. I mean, this is, by orders of magnitude, the biggest week of her career. I mean, she's four sets away from winning this tournament. I think it's much more about how she's handling, you know, it's Thursday night, it's New York, like Steve Nash in the box. I think it's much more about sort of handling the moment than being physically tired. It's cool out here tonight. I think it's much more about the nerves than physically how she's going to hold up.
We're not allowed to claim Emma Raducanu. She was born in Toronto but moved to London at two. When's the last time you saw two underdog stories this big in a semifinal at a Grand Slam?
You know, we were all talking about how women's tennis, you had Bianca, you had Naomi Osaka, you had Ash Barty, how we were finally going to get this core group at the top and we were going to stop with these wide-open draws. That hasn't worked out so well, but it's been really delightful. I mean, you have a feeling these are two players who are going to be here a while. But, I mean, this had Emma Raducanu. You think Layla sort of a bolt out of the blue. Emma Raducanu wasn't the top 10 British player 60 days ago. And now here she is in the semifinals of the U.S. Open. It's crazy, but it's been, I think it's been a real shot in the arm to this tournament that didn't have Federer, didn't have Nadal, didn't have Serena Williams, and yet they're not all that missed because we've had these great storylines.
Yeah, without a doubt. So let's focus in on the men for a second because you brought up who isn't there. There are two players who are there who seem to be the odds-on favorite. Novak Djokovic and Medvedev has played as well as anyone outside of Joker this year. Does Felix have a chance against Medvedev?
They played was it, three years ago. So Felix would have been, I think he may, he would have been 18. It was 7-6 in the third set. It was actually in Canada, that match. It was a long Rogers match. Cup, yeah. I think Felix is good. Yeah, the Rogers Cup, exactly. And I think Felix is really potentially going to benefit from having such a short previous match. It was like 68 minutes, and his opponent quit early in the second set. I think that could be a benefit. I think Felix is the underdog, but I you know, it's 60-40, I would say. I mean, it would not surprise anyone if Felix pulled this off.
It's amazing to see this this tournament wide open on the men's side, and we all understand why. But is Novak Djokovic right now establishing himself? And I know that this is a tough argument, but when we look back at this, how it's opening up and how Joker is walking in and collecting these titles, is this going to cement his argument for the GOAT?
I got to look over my shoulder and make sure. I mean, these are fighting words. You want to get the fanny pack crowd. You want to get tennis fans riled up. You bring this up.
Right.
I mean, so if he never mind winning the Grand Slam, which is like, you know, this is like tennis's batting 400s. I mean, this is one of these holy grail records. If he wins, he'll move ahead of Federer Nadal. He has winning head-to-head records against both of them. He'll be number one longer. I think it's really getting hard to make a credible case for the other two guys. And if he wins on Sunday, you know, we got a lot of tennis left to play. Let's not get ahead of ourselves. Yeah. If he wins Sunday, though, I think it's kind of game, set, match on this whole GOAT discussion.
All right, just the two of us talking. No one's listening. I don't think anyone's peering over the ears. How much of this is timing, John? Like, I feel like part of the equation, and I know that he lined up with some of the greatest of all time early in his career, but it feels like the way this is opening up for him, there's some timing involved with the way he's been able to accrue some of these Grand Slam titles.
Keep this between us. But okay. No, I mean, I think that's a point you would raise if you were a Federer-Nadal advocate. The flip side of that is, you know, I mean, look who Federer had to beat early. You sort of knew that as the youngest of the three, this was going to be the argument, right? That he wasn't catching the other two guys in their prime. But I think you could just as easily say, boy, before Djokovic hit his stride, look who Federer had to beat to win his first five or six majors. Is that any more stiffer competition than who Djokovic has to beat now?
I still like that John McEnroe, if he's behind you, was number one in singles and number one in doubles at the same time. I still rate that.
That's good. Not too much doubles here.
No one's playing doubles anymore. No one gives a. They needed the paychecks back then. So let me ask you this: like Zverev beat him in the Olympics, right? Like this is if you were to rank the group of the next ones, I feel like Zverev would be high among that group of the next ones waiting to assume this mantle.
Yeah, I mean, so the big X factor is best of five set. I mean, this is, you know, anyone can throw four good innings on the mound. But if you make someone give you seven, then we'll really see what he's made of. And I feel like the best of five format is the big differentiator here. I think, you know, it's Medvedev, it's Zverev, it's Tsitsipas. I think Felix is going to get pretty close to cracking that. You know, it's one of these things where at the beginning of this tournament, yeah, Djokovic is going for the Grand Slam, but it's just a pity these stars aren't here. And quickly that was forgotten. And I think tennis ought to feel pretty good about where things are headed because we have all these new players on the men's side, on the women's side. They're young. They, as you say about Raducanu, they sort of have this multinational flavor to them. And someone's got to win these things, right? I mean, they're still going to hold four majors a year. They're still going to give away four trophies. Someone's going to step up. So whether it's Felix, whether it's Medvedev, whether it's Zverev, whether it's, you know, Tsitsipas on the men's side, women are still going to be wide open. Someone's going to take these trophies. So it's just a question of who.
Okay. I don't want you pandering here because you're on Canadian national TV. I don't need what are you guys drinking up there? And it's maple syrup. How many Canadians do we see in the final at the U.S. Open this year?
Oh, man.
You can say zero.
Play the odds and say one. You know, I think it's, I'd say two-thirds. I'd say one. I think Layla is the better, the better chance. You know, it's funny, though, because going back to what everyone's joking, it's maple syrup, it's, you and your, you know, it's Molson beer, and what do you guys do? But I do think there is something. whatever you guys are doing in terms of talent identification and getting young athletes, they could play a number of sports, getting them to tennis. I do think there's a serious topic of how does this country with one-tenth the population of the U.S. and similar economies and worse climate, how are you guys able to spot these young players and guide them to tennis? I do think that's something people really ought to pay attention to after they make the poutine jokes.
Yeah, it's funny because the National Training Center obviously gets a lot of attention, but the talent recognition part of that is never easy. And what you're saying is right. Like, you can draft anyone in the first round, develop them, get them to the major leagues. It's not always that easy. There's a Brian Taylor for every, you know, first ballot Hall of Famer that you draft in the first round. So I'm with you on this. Whatever it is that they're doing, we tip the cap to them because it's unbelievable. John, really appreciate you doing this with us. Really appreciate you whispering when you ask the tough questions with the crowd around you. We'll talk again soon.
You got it. Anytime.
There is John Wertheim, one of the best in the business. You can see his stuff, I don't know, Sports Illustrated, Tennis Channel, 60 Minutes. Like, just, he's pretty good. Time for one last break. We'll get the last call. Kevin Mickey auditions to come back tomorrow. Just kidding. I think. Last call. I'm kidding.
What?
Welcome back. Last call with Kevin Mickey. Before we get there, Kevin, I don't know how much fanny pack that you have planned for this edition of Last Call, but people are really mad at me that I was mean to the man wearing a fanny pack in the stand. Like, first off, until we tweet it, which we did, there is zero chance of him seeing this in any way, shape, or form. And I just thought it was funny to be wearing, to drop a foul ball, have binoculars around your neck, look like you're going to the Australian Outback, and have a fanny pack that big on. But Shar disagrees. I think your decision to make such a big deal of that poor senior citizen and his clothing, fanny pack, hat, friend is beneath you. It was juvenile, stupid, and surely there are other things to discuss. I'll take that as Shar wasn't a fan.
I would say that he wasn't a fan of your opinion. No.
I don't think he was a fan.
No. There's a lot of fanny pack supporters out there. Yes to fanny packs. Yes to wearing fanny packs whenever and wherever you want. I think it's the conclusion we're coming to.
Bennett wrote in and said, this is a win for fanny packs. Without it, he wouldn't have that ball.
That's just straight facts.
Or Bennett, he could catch the ball. That's another thing there. Single dad guy, Nick, writes in and says, this is 117% the absolute best home run ball catch next to the home run in your beer, which is obviously 150% the best. A lot of percentages.
That's a lot of percentages. I can't quite keep up with that. That's why the last math class I took was in grade 10. There is bad news for that fanny pack guy.
What?
Bad news for the fanny pack guy.
Yeah, he was just on national TV with this.
And it looks like also the groin thing must have hurt. You know what else hurts?
What's that?
The Baltimore Ravens losing several key players. Several. So more bad news for the Baltimore Ravens today. According to reports, running back Gus Edwards and cornerback Marcus Peters both suffered torn ACLs at practice. Apparently it happened on back-to-back plays. Ugh. They're undergoing further testing to confirm the diagnosis. The Ravens, they already lost running backs J.K. Dobbins and Justice Hill to season-ending injuries. How does this change the balance of power in the AFC North?
What are they, the Saskatchewan Rough Riders? Like, remember the Rough Riders had like four torn Achilles on the first day of camp? Like, I don't know what the hell's going on. But what did the Rough Riders do after those four torn Achilles on the first day of camp? Yeah. They started the season undefeated. Yeah. Baltimore Ravens, I don't know. I don't know who this hurts more, the Baltimore Ravens or everyone who drafted Gus Edwards in their pool and didn't even get a game out of him. This is interesting. In a tough division, this could really hurt the Baltimore Ravens. I'm making all these jokes. I'm kidding around about fantasy pools and the Saskatchewan Rough Riders. In that division, this could be a difference maker because the Steelers could be better. And I think the Cleveland Browns are going to be better.
Yeah, the Browns got a very improved defense. But now you have guys like Le'Veon Bell signed to the Ravens. Does he have any gas left in the tank?
We're going to find out.
Apparently.
We are going to. If you have a waiver wire that is open in your pool right now, Go get you Le'Veon Bell. It's worth the roll of the dice.
Let's stay with the NFL. And after a tumultuous offseason, many believe this will be Aaron Rodgers' final season with the Pack. Some people have been referencing this being the Packers' last dance. Of course, Michael Jordan had his last dance with the Bulls. Cut or uncut, calling this Packers season the last dance.
He's got one title. Like, take it easy. I get what you're doing. I understand it. It's relevant. It is timely. They got one title with Aaron Rodgers. Like, you need a couple more titles to call something the last dance. But I understand the reference. I get the reference. I appreciate it for Packers fans because he has been the carrier of what is a very proud torch. But take it easy with the last dance.
Yeah, I've seen some people saying that this could be the Toronto Maple Leafs' last dance, and that's even a more pump the brake situation.
They don't even have the one title.
Let me take a look to see how many titles they won. Zero.
Zero.
Timmy, we have to wish a happy birthday to someone. It is Adam Sandler's 55th birthday today. Sandler
just made another movie.
That's right. Yeah. He's always making movies. He's a big time Hoops fan. He's currently working on a basketball movie called Hustle. Co-starring Celtics forward Juancho Hernan Gomez. What is your favorite Adam Sandler movie?
Oof. I feel like I'm going to lose a lot of the database here. Happy Gilmore jumps out at me, if for strictly the idea that Sid Sixero had never seen it and thought it was a stupid premise. It is one of the better Adam Sandler movies. I feel like with kids now, grown-ups, underrated. And I know they did a grown-ups too. I don't know if you, like, you don't have kids, right?
No.
So is grown-ups ridiculous to you?
It was a movie that I watched and I would never watch again. I didn't hate it. I didn't love it. It was just, I consumed it and I moved past it.
Yeah, you. Billy Madison?
Here's the list, the definitive list.
Oh, okay.
Here we go.
With comments.
One, Happy Gilmore.
Okay.
One of the greatest sports movies of all time. Two, The Waterboy, another fantastic sports movie.
Oh, yeah, very good.
Yeah, The Mud Dog, too, under the Bourbon Bowl.
Yeah. I don't know if it's a fantastic sports movie. Just happened to be around.
Well, I said it was. Three, Big Daddy. Four, Wedding Singer. Five, Billy Madison.
Yeah. Wedding Singer, that's low. That's low.
You think it should be higher?
Yeah.
Where? Above or below Happy? One, two, three?
No, above Waterboy. And again, with kids, it alters my opinion on this.
Okay.
Okay, keep going. Where do you have another one?
After Wedding Singer, Billy Madison.
Okay.
Mr. Deeds, underrated Adam Sandler movie.
Get out of here. Go ahead.